listen to them for whatever reason.
Beautiful. Welcome to the Media Bids Power Hour. We're delighted that all of you are here. We have a wonderful program for you titled Growing Your Online Revenue. As all of you are getting settled in, we're delighted that you're here. We encourage you to not multitask over the course of the next 60 minutes we're together. In fact, if any of you would like to know why we do not have a visual component or a webinar component, it is not an accident. We've spent more than 25,000 hours training publications and publishing professionals like all of you, and we truly believe that an audio component and good old-fashioned note-taking means you have to listen, and there's no multitasking and distractions, okay? We keep it bone simple so that the learning experience is very rich and very deep. So turn off your cell phones and texts and, your email and anything else that will be a distraction and your phone line. Shut your office door and get set and get ready to get rolling here. This, again, is MediaBids Power Hour, and we've been hosting calls like this for the last 15 years and have a deep understanding of your publications and publishing world. I'd like to say good morning to Jed. Jed is the owner and founder of MediaBids. Have him say hello to all of you. Say a few words about the wonderful service that MediaBids provides, and it's the reason that we're all here together. These calls are done in connection and partnership with Jed and his team, and they are fantastic. So, Jed, how about some opening words here, and then I'll introduce Ryan, and we'll get started.
All right, thanks. You know, as always, I want to thank Ernest and in this case, Ryan as well. They really are experts in the field, and I always learn a lot on these calls as well. MediaBids is in the business of finding advertisers and selling ad space for publications. We do it a variety of different ways, but we're always looking for more publication participation. And we have over 17,000 advertisers that make purchases. So we'd love to talk to you if you're not using us about using us. There's no cost, but there's an online sign-up process. And if you are using us, we'd love to talk to you about how we can be more effective or do more for you. So thanks for participating and thanks for coming, and look forward to learning from Ernest and Ryan.
Great.
Thank you so much. And this is Ernest. My company is Power Hour, and we've been working with publications around the world. We have about 700 clients in 8 time zones and meet just like this by conference call. We help them with their training. We help them with their hiring, with their recruiting. We help them with their search engine optimization and their revenue streams. You'll be hearing from Ryan about that today. We give you strategies to win. That's the bottom line. In these economic times, no matter where you are around the globe, margins are tighter than ever. The models of print versus digital continue to be a very important component, at times confusing. And we hope that as a result of these calls and the wonderful work we're doing with Jed and MediaBids will be helpful for you. With us today as our guest, but a wonderful part of our team, is Ryan. Ryan is our VP of SEO and web strategies. He understands intensely the work that has to be done at websites in order for them to be seen by search engines. That's one part of the equation. And then the other part of the equation is the importance of driving revenue from your website. We already have 7 pages of inbound questions. We'd love to field your questions during the course of the program. It's very interactive. Ryan has worked on more than 4,000 websites for and with our clients, and in his professional experience, he does a fantastic job, and our clients love the work that he does for and with our publication clients. So, Ryan, how about a rousing hello to the group, and let's get rocking. I know we're today going to be talking about growing your online revenue, and our opening point will be about website revenue inventory, yes?
Yes, that's great. Good afternoon, everybody, and what a – I just – can't thank you guys enough for having me join the call. You know, it's one of those passions of mine. As silly as it may sound, my mom, still to this day, really does not know exactly what it is that I do for a living. But I can tell you and the people on this call that you will understand. Because our goal and our focus is nothing but helping people use the Internet to make more money with their businesses. And it's just something I absolutely love to talk about. And most importantly, Ernest and Jed, we've seen through our work with these publishers and publishing companies that these things work. And we're not just going to be talking about theories today. And we're not going to be talking about the typical 50,000-foot view. We're going to talk about things that are working today, things that we have seen work over the last 6 months, year, 2 years, so that when you get off this call, you can take this information and you'll get back to work and use it effectively. So I think it's going to be a great call.
Wonderful. So, Ryan, I know there's three key points that we intend to cover, and our first point is tied to what is your website revenue inventory. How do you know which portion of your inventory matters most or matters least? And then will your website inventory cannibalize your print advertising? So let's get kicked off right there, okay?
That sounds great. Well, the first thing I want to share with everybody is a fairly elementary point, but one that is often overlooked by publishers, and that is that you need to be offering advertising sizes that advertisers actually want. What happens a lot of times is that people will design a website, and then they'll say, oh, man, we need to have banner ads. Well, just stick them on the top. Throw them out to the right. Stick them onto the bottom. What happens is you have to, and I know that this may seem very intuitive, but it's a point that's overlooked often by publishers. You need to be offering what we refer to in the industry as interactive advertising bureau standard sizes. Now, if you're on the call today and you say, okay, got that, all right, stick with us because this is just the beginning, the first ingredient in this fine recipe that we're creating today. So the website for that is iabindiaalphabravo.net, and you don't have to be a subscriber of IAB. You just need to subscribe to their standard sizes. And right now, when you're determining your advertising revenue, there's two main sizes in the magazine world that are very popular. Let me tell you what's not popular. The skyscrapers that are 160 pixels wide by 600 pixels tall were very, very popular a year and a half ago and before. What's popular now are those ads that are square or rectangle shaped. Usually they're 300 pixels by about 300 pixels or 300 by 250. And those are called box ads. And, of course, the good old standard leaderboard that runs at the top of and the bottom of your website that's 728 by 90. So the first step in being able to make money is actually having inventory.
So let me just pause for just a second, Ryan, because Jed and I will be the voice of reality here as we're kind of rolling and talking about inventory, just to take it down to 30 feet for just a second. I mean, there are certain sizes and specs, just like you have in your own publication, whether it's an eighth of a page, a full page, double truck, sizes and specs that you have in your publication. And generally, you set those, but then there's also agency guidelines as well and expectations. The same exact thing happens on the digital side, okay?
Right.
That there are expectations, that there's a level of sophistication and savviness that you know those sizes, you know what makes sense, and that's what advertisers are buying. Does that make sense, Ryan and Jed?
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
yeah.
It's interesting, right? Because it's with websites, you sort of have the ability to do what print has really never been able to do, and that is come up with a standardization that is really tough to implement in print.
Good point. Yeah, good point. And it's also important to note that when you're dealing with an agency, they're going to ask for certain sizes. If you tell them that you have a 321 by 75. Excuse me, that's a size that, you know, you like and it seems to fit your website, but it's not a standard size. And so because it's not a standard size, it's not one that they already have an ad created for, it potentially makes you less attractive to that agency because they potentially are going to have to go and create ads to meet your spec rather than you having specifications in place and ad sizes that they can readily, you know, become a part of. It seems very elementary, but I think Ernest and Jed as well, you'll attest to the number of publishing companies we've worked with that just truly do not have the popular ad sizes. It's also really important to note that you need to keep up with the IAB and their sizes because these sizes change. And you want to make sure that you offer the most popular sizes, to your advertisers. It's really, really important part of, and before we talk about determining your exact inventory.
Right, perfect. So continuing down the path of inventory, we're talking about understanding website revenue inventory. Share with us just a little bit related to the formula of inventory versus visitors, the formula related to that for the group, if you will.
Sure. In most cases, it's fairly standard for most magazine publishers to have four ad units on a page. So if you have your pen right now, what I'd encourage you to do so you can follow this math, and it doesn't just blow by you quickly. Write down the number 1,000, And let's just say that's the number of pages, not the number of visitors, the number of pages that your website serves each month. So 1,000 pages are looked at each month. Write down 1,000. And then put a little time symbol. And if you have 4 banners on that page, you're going to take 1,000 times the number 4, which is going to give you a total of 4,000 banner ads that you can deliver. And we're just going to say that 1,000 is in 1 month, okay? So immediately that lets you know that you have 4,000 available ad units to sell to advertisers or offer in your advertising packages. So obviously if you add 6 ads, you know, to your page, then you're going to have 6,000 potential ads that you can serve. Now, this always leads to the next question of, hey, you know, if I've got this, you know, this many ads, how many ads do I need to serve up for an advertiser in order for them to be happy? Well, that really comes down to your audience, and so you're really going to need to, you know, to determine that, you know, overall. So what you want to kind of strike a goal for is to make sure you have at least 4 interactive advertising bureau standard sizes, you know, on your website, and that you are able to serve ads into those. And then what you'll do is you'll break that total, let's just say the number is 4,000, you're going to break that down into how many of those are going to be sold, how many are you going to use for marketing, and maybe how many of those are you going to use, you know, for make goods. And that way you can back yourself into the number to determine, you know, how many advertisers you can run on your website. The biggest thing is this. There's not really an industry standard, if you will, for the number of times an ad needs to be displayed. You're going to know your advertiser, and you're going to be able to very quickly determine, does their ad need to be seen 2,000, 3,000, you know, 4,000 times, or they're going to make a demand to you. They're going to say, I need my ad to be seen, you know, X number of times. So as you're putting together your inventory, I like to use that number of 4, and I would say probably a maximum of 6, you know, total ad units on a particular page.
Right. So Ryan, let me just pause because we have a number of questions that I'm going to insert here related to the 3 points. We're still working on point number 1. And again, for those of you that are listening, please just send an email to ernest@powerhour.com or just hit reply to the reminder or confirmation that you received by email and pose your questions to us. But we have one from Jeff who said, what web stats are the most meaningful? So while we're talking here about inventory, you want to just give us a laser response to Jeff related to the web stats that directly tie to online revenue and this inventory piece?
Sure. As you're putting together your, you know, your rate cards, your sales pitch, if you will, your sales story, you're going to want to look at your analytics, and you really want to know unique visitors. Unique visitors is far more important than total visitors.
Okay. And
the next thing you're going to want to know is how many of those visitors are new. How many visitors each month coming back to your website are new? Because you can take that 2 different directions. You're able to say to an advertiser, look at the number of new people coming to the website. And then you can take it the other direction and say, look at the number of stable people coming each and every month. So the new visit number, you know, is important. You're also going to want to know what are the high traffic areas of your website. What pages are drawing in the most traffic? Because that can work 2 ways for you as well. For example, if you have a contest page, it may draw a ton of traffic, but it's not quite as good as an article page because people entering contests tend to enter quick and leave. An article page is going to be just a little bit better because people will spend, you know, a little more time on it. So the last thing you really want to know is how many individual pages were served by my website last month? How many pages? Because you need to be able to tell, you need to be able to say to a potential advertiser, I've got X number of unique individuals looking at X number of pages in a given month, and on those pages we're able to serve X number of ads in a given 30-day period or a given cycle. So those are the important numbers to know. Unique visitors, new visitors, total pages that are served, and then really start to focus in, we'll talk about it in a second, on your high traffic areas.
Okay, so this is Ernest. One more question to insert, and then we'll pause. Jed, if you have an additional question, otherwise we'll finish with point number 1. But Tyler asks us, if we don't have all the detailed stats, how can we sell online? Okay, so this really is the opposite of Jeff's question. And Tyler, just, you know, a laser cut at this. everything about your website is trackable and measurable.
Sure.
You know, and if we're going to get in there and sell anything, then we have to be able to define what it is we're selling and what the volume and the velocity is. No different than with your print publication. Do you, in fact, print 10,000 or 110,000? But there is a defined number, and that number is what we sell from. It ties
sure.
into our CPM, our cost per thousand. So, Tyler, our challenge or opportunity for you is it really is impossible to sell web web advertising and drive online revenue for any publication in the world without having the stats behind the scenes. Okay.
Right.
All right.
Unless maybe the question maybe was if you don't have good statistics.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have good statistics, then you need to focus on the quality of people that are coming. I think that you had mentioned, or I saw that question come in, and I think it was from Utah Business Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And if I recall. From seeing, that magazine before in the past,
mm-hmm.
You have to really then focus on the quality or the demographic that's coming if you don't have good statistics. But to Ernest's point, if you don't have any statistics, then that's something that can be remedied for free by using Google Analytics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and further to that point, Tyler, we've done prior calls, and we do a lot of work with our clients, helping them on the other side, which is bringing. We have a question that came in from Bonnie. How can we increase traffic to our website? Bonnie, this relates also to Tyler's piece. You know, there's two sides of a seesaw. One, we got to bring them, and we have to know why we're bringing and who we're bringing. And then, Tyler, back to your point, now we need to be able to capture and measure, right? And if we can do those two things, then we've got something that's very sellable.
Yeah.
Let me pause here. Jed, any thoughts or questions? Are we clear enough and succinct enough in the way we're fielding some of these inbound questions?
Yeah, no, I think it's great. I mean, the only thing I would add to Ryan's description of important stats might be, and this is more from an advertiser perspective, would be clicks.
Sure.
Because it's obviously that's just sort of showing the kind of response you're getting.
Sure. The clicks and the click-through rate are really important, and it's keep in mind it's only one way of judging the success of an advertising campaign. We have to make sure that we're real careful when we're selling online advertising that we don't get so hung up on a click-through rate, because many advertisers, their goal may not be clicks. Their goal may be branding, for example. And so we want to make sure that we always, set a success meter in advance and say, Mr. Advertiser, advertising in our publication and advertising on our website, what is your goal? Do you want eyeballs? Do you want audience? Or do you need transactional information? Do you need people coming to the website? Because click-through rate is a great gauge, but it's only one way to gauge success.
Perfect.
Right. Yeah, no doubt.
So, Ryan, let's circle back to point number one. We're still working through this point related to inventory and also talking about does our website inventory, if you could say a few words about does the inventory cannibalize our print advertising? You want to comment on that?
Sure, absolutely. It does not. As long as you sell it in such a way that you reward people for being a print advertiser. There are so many ways in terms, and we'll talk more about bundling in a minute, but what I like to do and what we like to do is reward people for being a print advertiser. Let's never forget that the concept of the magazine is not going to change over the course of the next 10 years. Now, the way that it's delivered may change, but the concept of great editorial surrounded by quality, relatable advertising in a publication is really, really important. And so the reason I feel it's not going to cannibalize is because it's going to enhance the total advertiser experience. Never forget that the old model of the billboard advertising, people need to see your message 7 times before they make an action to purchase or inquire about that product. You want to make sure you're able to convey to the advertiser, okay, one of them, maybe they are a billboard advertiser. One is in your publication. A third time might be on the website. A fourth time might be in a newsletter. A fifth time, maybe in another section of your website. So I see it as an absolute enhancement. I think once you embrace it and understand it, I think you will wonder how in the world did we ever sell when it was just only print, because the enhancement of the integrated buy is proven to show greater return on investment for an advertiser.
Yeah, let me just read a stat, Ryan. This was a study done by iProspect about off-channel marketing and their influence on online search behavior. Here, listen to this stat. 69% of online users are driven to search from exposure to some offline channel.
Yeah.
Okay? 67%, two-thirds of what's bringing them to, frankly, I read all kinds of publications, and I'm tearing and I'm clipping. Look, I get plenty of online stuff as well, but the point is that the companionship of print and digital back and forth must go hand in hand. And there's really three components: your print publication, really solid and focused on your audience; your website, clearly the same, there's that seesaw back and forth; and the third piece, the glue in between all of it, is your e-newsletter going in and out to the readers of your publication, and also the ability to sell advertising. We'll come in and talk about that in a little bit, about bundling packages and so forth, but when you've got those three legs to your bar stool, that stool is rock solid.
Absolutely.
Okay, that chair is rock solid, okay? Let me pause and see. I have an additional, let's continue then. Is there anything more that we want to talk about in the cannibalizing, or Jed, is there anything you want to add related to that before we move to
I just wanted to ask Ryan real quickly, do you find that the audience online is an extension of the print audience, or do you, or demographically, do you think that it's more likely to be different than the print audience?
My experience has been that I often find it to be the same demographic but a different audience. There's a lot of examples that I've heard given of people that, for example, they don't subscribe or purchase, just as an example, Cigar Aficionado magazine, but yet they visit it online. So I think it's really important for you to do, as a publication owner or sales manager or whatever, to do some surveys and find out, do you read our magazine? Because it's also really important when you go to an advertiser that you're able to say to them, listen, the reason you want to be online with us as well as being in the magazine is because we have two actually different, you know, groups of readers. They're the same demographic, but your audience has actually expanded. And keep in mind, you know, the demographic doesn't necessarily mean just age. So you might have someone that's passionate about a particular hobby. They might be 55 plus and reading magazines. The same person that's passionate about that hobby, you know, might be 25 to 54, and they're the ones that tend to gravitate more towards, you know, towards the internet. So I think as you put together your sales package, you want to make sure that you have some good surveys to find out, you know, are these unique, the same, different? And what's great is if you can find out that they're different, the same demographic but different people, because then you really, it makes it so much easier for you to prove to an advertiser that they need to be a part of what you're doing in a multimedia capacity.
You know, Ryan, for example, I get, this is Ernest, and I get the New York Times. I used to get it in print, now I get it electronically, and if they were surveying, they would know the reasons why. But then I go the other way, and you know I'm a big skier, and I get my ski magazine in print,
right,
but I get my ski e-newsletter because I want to go see the pictures, I want to go look at the videos, and they bring
right
me back to their website. Who's at their website? Their advertiser. So they got two ways kind of in stereo to scoop me up, and how am I going back to their website? I'm getting that e-newsletter that comes in, scooping me back to the website, and off we go again. So fabulous.
Yeah.
I do have an inbound question from Steve. Steve says, we have a few new websites we just put up in the last couple of months. We are charging a fixed price for a tile, banner, et cetera. Would it be better to charge a CPM, cost per thousand rate, even though that might reduce ad revenue?
This is Ryan. My thought is you want to be able to go to your advertisers with as easy a message for them to understand as possible. So if you are operating in sort of a high-tech industry, if you will, maybe in the medical field, things like that, where these advertisers are used to buying based upon cost per thousand, I think you can use that for the web. If you're dealing with an industry where people are used to buying on frequency, used to paying one fee, then what you do is you figure out how many ads you want to serve for an advertiser for a fixed amount in a given 30-day period. See, never forget that you're asking advertisers to sort of make, even though the gap, if you will, the Grand Canyon is now more like a smaller valley than it used to be, but you're still asking them to go from something that's physical, tangible, you can smell it, you can turn the pages, etc., to something that's more akin, if you will, to vapor. And so what you want to do is make it as easy for them to make a decision as possible. So don't just adopt cost per thousand because it's the way it's done on the internet. We have publishers that are going both routes, and I've seen overall more people that operate off of a fixed rate with websites that have lower traffic tend to do better than people that sell based on cost per thousand. But if you happen to be in an industry like, for example, food and wine, for example, at a $50 to $90 cost per thousand, if you're in that type of niche industry where you really have this really, really great little audience, you know, you may benefit, you know, from a cost per thousand, you know, model. But I would make it as easy as possible for an advertiser to make a buy with you.
Perfect, Steve. Steve, we're hoping that's helpful. If there's an additional question, please let us know and we'll tuck that back in. Ryan, why don't we shift to point number two? And again, for those of you that want to send us real-time questions, that would be great. Point number two is, what website stats impact your website revenue opportunities? How will you and your sales team bundle your print advertising with your website inventory?
Sure.
Ryan, where to first on that?
Goodness, how much time do we have left?
We got about 16 hours. Okay, 16 minutes. Let's roll.
Well, we already began to talk about it, but what I like to do, I don't refer to, you know, when we're dealing with an advertiser, and I know you don't either, Ernest, as a pitch. You know, it's more of a story. I'm telling a story, you know, to this potential advertiser. So I really want to be able to tell them how many unique people, because that's sort of like the Internet's version of circulation, you know, sort of, in a kind of a, you know, a shifty way. So I want to know how many unique people are coming to the website. I want to be able to share that. I want to know how many of those people are new or how many people are repeat visitors. I want to know how many pages we're serving. I want to know how many total ads, because I want to be able to present and paint for them, you know, a really quality picture. And once you're able to get those statistics, then you're able to really prove your audience. You're able to say, okay, Mr. Advertiser, our demographic is this. Their income range is this. They tend to do this when they read them. They read our publication. And they tend to do this, you know, when they come online. So I think the culmination of these statistics is mission critical to your ability to be able to sell. I sort of mentioned this before. Oftentimes, publishers will say, well, I don't have much website traffic, so that's why I'm not selling it, or I don't have much website traffic, that's why I'm giving the banner ads away. It's really important for everyone to understand that small traffic is actually good traffic in the publication business, because people are coming to your website for a reason. There, it used to be in 1996 that you would sit in front of your AOL computer after it buzzed and you listened to the modem screech at you for a few minutes, and you'd say, okay, where am I going to go? I'm just going to surf around. It just doesn't happen like that anymore. People go to Google, Bing, Yahoo, type in a search term, you know, off they go. They go to a few favorite websites. And so we don't have this people just happen to pop by your website, just happenstance. You know, it's highly unlikely that a soccer mom comes by at, you know, a website that's completely unrelated, maybe just to the oil industry. I mean, you've got very, very locked in and targeted people. So if you have low inventory on your website, use your publication numbers to be able to boost your total audience package that you're presenting. And then focus in on the quality of the people that are coming, you know, to the website. Under promise, over deliver, but you've got to have statistics in order to be able to, you know, sell the story in some capacity.
Perfect. So let's pause here and tuck in some questions related to that. Let's see. So Chris says to us, how do we sell web ads if our click-through rate is disgustingly low?
Okay. Well, it's a good question. It's a very, very common question, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, I alluded to this slightly before, and that is make sure that your sales team is not selling based upon a particular click-through rate. Now, excuse me, if the click-through rate is low, there's a couple things that are going on. One, do you have the wrong people coming to the website? It's possible, you know, not likely. Is the creative bad? Oh, hold the phones here for a second. Everyone's going to say, wait a minute, I'm not in charge of the creative. Well, here's what I like to say. My advertiser gave me the creative. It's not my fault. It's horrible. What sometimes you have to do is you may have to say to an advertiser, based on our experience, if you want high click-through rates, this ad is not going to work. May we design a banner ad for you based upon our best practices that will work, and let's run them together. If your ad works, we'll take ours down. If ours works and yours doesn't, we'll keep running ours. We all know that good creative is very important in the print industry. Often, though, advertisers do not recognize bad creative. The one thing to remember when it comes to the web is that calls to action and clear offers, things being really straightforward and simple are so important to driving that click-through rate up. But you have to identify in the beginning and set yourself up for success. You want to say to the advertiser, what do you want to achieve by partnering with us? Do you need to sell 50 mountain bikes? Okay? Do you need 50 clicks over to your website? What do you need to be extremely happy and come back and renew over and over and over with us? Identify that early, because if they say, I need 5,000 clicks, you have to identify that early and say, well, wait a minute. I mean, we just, our website, we typically don't deliver those kind of numbers. If you're going to, you need to, if you want that, you're going to need to have a giveaway to get people, that many people over to your website. You're going to need to offer free shipping or something for free, okay? So if your click-through rate is really, really low, it's something you potentially have the capacity to change by working a little bit harder, you know, with the advertiser. But it's not an uncommon thing to have happen.
All right, excellent. And we're hoping, Chris, that that's helpful. If you'd like to add an additional comment to that, please send us an email to ernest@powerhour.com or just hit reply to the confirmation that got you here, and we'll tuck in part two to that call. I've got another question from Anthony from New York, who said, how do you compete with lowball cost per thousand pricing and still remain profitable? How do we tie that piece in, kind of the other side to Chris's question?
Yeah, the biggest thing that I would typically say to advertisers, and everybody remember, I mean, this is not theoretical. I mean, Ernest and Jed and I, we work with advertisers every single day and work with our clients with advertisers. We don't allow advertisers to test our audience. And by what I'm saying by that is we typically don't get into a situation, you know, where we're going to go terribly off rate card to, you know, just to get a buy. These low-ball numbers that are oftentimes thrown around, typically, you know, you'll get one buy out of it. Your competitor will get one buy, and they're just devaluing everything that's happening. So what I like to do is I'd like to encourage you to find a price that you feel is fair, it's comparable in your marketplace, stick to your guns, and it's really simple to say, listen, you know, we don't let advertisers just test our audience. We know who these people are. We know that they're going to respond to good, solid, creative, and this is the price point, you know where we are. A lot of times advertisers that are drawn to that lowball price are very, very hit and miss. Typically, they're folks that are going to be there and gone, and a lot of times their return on investment is going to be, you know, so low when they run with a competitor that lowballs them. A lot of times they're going to gravitate, you know, back towards you. Now, if this is something that you face over and over again, it's perhaps maybe that the cost per thousand is low because their website traffic is very, very high. So the cost per thousand is lower. The advertiser in the end ends up paying a bunch, you know, of money, but the entry point is lower. You can adjust, you know, your cost per thousand based upon your traffic in the end so that the advertiser ends up paying about the same anyway. But you might just need to stick to your guns and say, listen, I've got a great audience. This is what we feel that it's worth, and we'd love to have you become a partner with us.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Ryan. And Jed, let me just pause. Your thoughts as we're sort of rolling along here and talking about these.
I guess my question on that would be that, you know, I think that sort of approach makes a lot of sense when you're dealing with local advertisers. You know, how do you deal with regional or national advertisers who have more exposure to some of the networks that are out there where a dollar a thousand is a lot of money.
Sure. Yeah, it's just not the same thing. Those are typically advertisers that, you know, it's probably not going to work out for you, excuse me, in the long run.
Right.
It's not going to work out because when you're dealing with networks, the click-through rate is going to be, typically is going to be horrible. The delivery, you know, they can't guarantee eyeballs. There's not a lot of protection against, you know, spam. So in the long run, you know, a lot of times I advise people to pretty much sort of steer clear of those type of, you know, network buys because in the end it does not end up, you know, working out, you know, from that perspective. You know, when you're talking about some of these bigger networks that are trying to do things like classmates.com, you know, and things like that. Now, there are ad networks that offer advertising that's very, very niche-oriented, quality stuff. I've seen it a lot in the hunting industry where you've got, you know, like the Bass Pro Shops and Cabela's and people like that of the world that understand that they're going to be targeting into a really solid niche.
Right.
And so they're willing to pay, you know, a little bit more. So it's a real catch-22, and you may have to set up different rate cards for national and local advertisers. You may just have to kind of roll with the punches on, on some of those campaigns. But keep this in mind too. If you junk up your website with some of these, you know, sort of just kind of bad, you know, like screensaver type advertisements and stuff like that, it really does, you know, diminish the overall look and general quality of your web presence as well.
Yeah. And Jed, just to that point, nothing excites me more than the opportunity to compete. So any time I'm in a selling scenario and Ryan and I are working with, you know, our teams and so forth, whether it's on the print or the digital side, competing is fabulous as long as you know who you're competing with and what they bring to the table. Okay? And if you know that, and, you know, if we just want to talk, you know, CPM and cost per thousand, give me a break. It's like we're fighting 25 opponents, right? And we can't swing around fast enough. But if we clearly know who the two or the three, you know, that they're targeting, and we know that who we're competing with, you know, then we can really talk about what the value is of, you know, what we know about our readers and what we've learned from the surveys and what we learned about their, you know, their buying trends. And when we have that kind of information, bring any competitors on. Bring on 25. But we always have to start with what do we bring that's strong and powerful. And, Jed, as you know, we've talked about doing media summaries, right, in prior calls. We've done entire calls on that. And then that lends itself to a media comparison. My gosh, if I have five digital competitors that are reoccurring themes, if I'm in the fishing space and it is Cabela's that I'm competing against, guess what? I've got a media comparison of my print story and my digital versus theirs. Game on. Let's go.
Right.
Okay? So the real point is here, who are we competing with? What are we competing against? And then how do we separate each of those objections and really go at those? So often it's, well, in the end, you know, my cost per thousand beats yours, so, you know, off we go, and I'm not going to do business with, you know, company A versus company B. In our world of thinking, that's where the selling begins. That's where the sales professionals really step in and lean into the challenge and really showcase their expertise in their sector with their readers, with their publication, with their website.
Right.
Okay? So, beautiful. Let's just see here. Okay, let's go forward. Wrapping up point number two, Ryan, is there anything more that we want to say about the bundling of advertising and website inventory on number two? I've got one or two quick questions, and then we're going to transition into point number three here, okay?
Sure. I think the biggest thing in putting together an integrated buy is for you to present to your advertiser a very clear value proposition. I think it needs to be exceedingly clear. I think you need to spell out, you know, the more you do with me in print, the greater I can offer you in terms, you know, of online discounts and advertising. Because obviously we all understand that the cost of putting together, you know, a publication and the cost of the website, you know, the margins are significantly different. So I like to encourage, and oftentimes I'll even call it something like Print Plus, for example. And we'll say, the more print you run with me, the more I can offer you, you know, online. They're not free. We don't do anything for free. So what we might do is we might set up plans, and this is just an example, maybe a gold, silver, and a bronze plan. And let's just say, for example, the gold plan is a full-color four-page ad or a full-page ad, okay? In addition to that, on the gold plan, you're also going to receive a top leaderboard banner. You're going to receive inclusion in our e-newsletter going out to 6,000 people or whatever it is. We're going to also then announce your new product on our Facebook fan page. We're going to send out two tweets to all of our Twitter listeners and followers, and we're also going to include you in our overall general monthly e-newsletter. And all of that can be purchased together for $1,500. That normally would cost you $2,900 if you brought those things separately. By bundling them together, excuse me, it saves you $700. I think it's really important for you to present a very clear value proposition, because what most advertisers think is, great, here's what you want me to do. You want me to spend more money. Well, yes. I mean, yes, that's the case. But if we present to them a very clear, you normally would pay this to reach this large of audience. We're offering you an expanded audience, maybe 300% more of an audience for maybe only 10% more in spending. Every time that we present this in a very clear, simple, and concise way, advertisers tend to get it. Now, I will give you this caveat. It typically, when you move to this model of a bundled approach, typically it's always going to work better on new advertisers than your old advertisers. It doesn't mean your old advertisers won't get it and won't appreciate it, but in their mind, you're just asking them to spend more money. So So a lot of times with the new advertisers, they've never seen you before, they've never heard you before, and in that circumstance, in that scenario, it always tends to work a little bit better. Now, just the last exclamation point on that is, I love media kits. Media kits are great. But when I'm presenting packages, I like it to be concise, clear. I like to use one sheet, really shows the packages, exactly what they're getting, shows exactly what the savings are. And there's a line at the bottom that says, you know, this is where you sign, so, you know, let's get going.
So, and just to pause on this, because I'd like to give Ryan a real-life example just
perfect.
In the last 30 days working with one of our clients in Arizona, where we started with a cost per thousand of $1,200. They were covering a lot of territory. We got more tightly focused on one aspect of their print, and now they were at $136. We
wow.
then added in cost per thousand. Then we added in their radio show and the listeners and exposure, e-newsletter visibility, website visibility, and industry shows, and took their cost per thousand every step. If you can kind of imagine five lines going down one of our classic media summaries,
yep.
we could literally walk the advertiser through from the print to the radio to the e-newsletter to the website and to industry shows, and went from $136 down to $17 cost per thousand. And we want all of you to hear us really, really clear. This is the classic. If a tree falls in the woods and no one hears it, did it fall? My client says to me, hey, we got this wonderful radio show. I'm like, stop. How often? What kind of listeners? What kind of stats? What kind of demographics? Beautiful. That goes on our media summary. Hey, we've got this e-newsletter that goes out. Beautiful. What frequency? How many readers? How many eyeballs? Every
right.
single step, we're taking credit, and that reduced and reduced and reduced the cost per thousand. It's
mm-hmm.
extraordinary. And, Ryan, of course, you know the example we're referring to here. So
right.
every one of you have those examples, but it's only as good as you sell it and present it. And there's no, and by the way, in writing, step by step, because there's no one better in the world at giving that presentation than you. But it's only as good as you can convey it in a very step-by-step format for your advertisers to truly get it.
Right.
Okay? All right, let's pause right here. Let's shift to point number three, and let's talk to those of you who are the sales leaders on this call. As a sales leader, sales manager, sales coach, VP of sales, owner or president of your company, let's shift gears to the other side for just a second, because we want to talk about the steps for coaching and training your team
sure.
on how to sell website advertising and inventory and what compensation models work best.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ryan, let's shift to this, and then we've got
sure.
some questions we want to tie right in here, okay?
Well, the good news is that I truly can tell you that you really can teach an old sales dog new tricks.
I
have an example of a woman that I worked with that had been selling in a publishing space for years and years. And when the online component was offered to her, it just was one of these, oh, man, you know, this is way too much. I don't get it, et cetera, et cetera. And once we got her, and this is what I'm offering, once we got her trained up, got her to understand what the offerings truly were, we took time, we spent time on it, we had her and the team involved in putting the plans that we're selling together so they really understood what was involved. And we involved them in the entire process, spent a lot of time on training, understanding what are the sizes, who are these people, what does a click-through rate mean, get them trained up. Once all these things happened, began to gel together, Ernest, this lady told me not that long ago, she said, I recently changed company. She sent me an email, and they don't have much of an online component. She said, I feel like I'm selling now with one arm tied behind my back. She said, I don't know how to sell without an online component. So the good news is if you spend some, you dedicate some budget to it, dedicate some time to getting people up to speed, fully and clearly up to speed, give them these examples that, you know, they really can expand the touch points for these potential advertisers. It really will drive return on investment. It's not just vapor that's floating out there. These bundled packages really help advertisers make a difference and make an impact. So the first point that I wanted to say about it, Ernest, is that we really have to spend some time as the boss getting our sales staff and sales managers trained up and coached up.
And just in response to that, Ryan, you're absolutely correct that, you know, there is an art and a science to publication sales. And we all know that. Ryan, myself, Jed, we've all been around publications for several decades, 50, 60 years of combined experience here. And the world of publications has been around for a very long time. But when you start to talk about weaving in the web and weaving in packages and tying in cost per thousand, e-newsletters, website, inventory, all those pieces, that's sort of new turf for all
right.
of us. And we also know that all of you are investing time, money, and resources on the website, and I think we're all sort of, you know, twiddling our thumbs with the version of how do I monetize that? Well, guess what? We know how. But the point is that it's not exactly like go to the library and go find a book or go to Google and go sort of piece it together. That to understand the print side and then how it ties into the digital side is a very unique advantage. And frankly, for those of you that are here, we know that you are the leaders in your sector and in your categories of publications. Because frankly, your competitors are not here. This is your advantage. But now you've got to do what? Take the action steps to deploy it. Take the action steps to weave it together so that your sales team knows exactly how to sell the inventory and the opportunities that you've got cooking. Jed, you want to comment on that just as you kind of look across the landscape?
No, I think, without a doubt, you know, everything you say I would concur with. You know, I the only question I have sort of putting myself in the shoes of maybe some of the people listening is,
mm-hmm.
Ryan, is there any formula that you try to use when you try to look at your expenses over sort of the different mediums in terms of trying to figure out what percentage of of a print spend, for example, should be spent online? Like for example, if a full page is $1,000 to use easy numbers, is there a traditional formula that goes along with that where maybe, you know, online is, you know, X CPM
sure.
type of
sure.
thing?
Yeah, and I understand your question completely. Unfortunately, I'll have to give kind of a broad answer because obviously, you know, whether it's a B2C publication, B2B, it just really kind of depends, you know, local newspaper, local shopper. Typically, in most cases, it's about 25%. Approximately, overall. So, you know, if the print, you know, if the overall print buy, say, is $1,000, typically, you know, the ratio is about 25%, in addition, in most cases, is where most of those companies are going to be at.
Right. Okay.
And that doesn't say that's going to work for every single business because,
right.
you know, some businesses are just going to require more. You know, they may use their print ad, as a sort of foundational element to drive people over to, you know, the website. Or they may use their banner ads to do a lot more of, client acquisition. So if, for example, they're using the print ads for awareness and they're using their online ads to try to bring in leads, you know, then that ratio is going to be, you know, could be completely different. And then it'd be based upon the business unit choice, you know, at the particular at the business level to find out, okay, how much do we need to spend, you know, in order to be able to draw in X number of leads. But it leads to people say, well, how do I price online? Well, in a lot of cases, in most cases that I've observed, if your web traffic is less than your total circulation, for example, typically around 25 to 30% of your 12-time rate is about where your banner ad pricing, you know, should be, 25 to 30% of your, you know, full-page ad in your publication. Now, if your web traffic is higher than the circulation of your publication, then your online advertising is going to be pretty close to the same as what you're charging for a full-page ad, in your publication. And you may say, well, wait a minute. How is that even, you know, remotely possible? Well, if you have more people online than are reading your publication, wouldn't it make sense that the advertising rate would be equal, at least equal? Why would it be less if you've got the same people?
The argument would be that it could be less because you have more competition online than you do in print.
Yep, good point. Yeah, good point. That could be one of the arguments, you bet. Or the advertiser could say, hey, it costs a lot less, you know, to have it online. You know, as well, but it's a pretty good gauge. If you look at your web rates right now, And you're going to find that most people that, I won't make the assumption most people on this call, but most publishers are charging about 4 to 5% of what their full page rate is in their publication. They're typically, in most cases, if you've run that scenario, most of the time they're significantly undercharging for what's being displayed on their website.
Let's pause right here. And this whole piece, this is Ernest, talking about compensation models. And Ryan and myself and Jed have looked at compensation models, for at least the last couple of decades. And as all of you know, under the umbrella of Power Hour, we have a recruiting division. And the point of that is that we're looking at hundreds and hundreds of compensation packages, whether it's through the candidate's eyes or through the company's eyes. And quite honestly, there's a whole piece, just big picture. And, you know, Jed, this is something we might come back into an entire call about compensation. But what you point to is what you get in compensation. So I was working with the president of a large publishing company, about a $100 million group, earlier today. And, you know, we're frankly talking about a person who's in a business development capacity. And 85% of this individual's compensation was coming directly from salary. You know, that means there's not that much opportunity to really give them incentive to go hunt. So be very careful about the mixed blend of what part of a person's compensation is fixed versus variable. And you have to do that on the print side, and then coming right back to the digital side, the online side, you got to be equally sensitive to that. So you really, there's an art and science here, once again, to how you build compensation plans. There's lots of modeling that we share with our clients and work to do in advance, kind of research you have to do on terms of your current comp plan. And then you have to do some what-if scenarios to be certain that it plays, okay?
Sure.
So all of those pieces behind the scenes have got to be dialed in, okay? Let me just pause here because we have a few minutes before the top of the hour. We have fielded a lot of questions as we've been rolling along. Maybe, Ryan, let me just tuck in one or two quick ones here, then we'll pause, and then we'll talk to the group about how we'll open up the call more informally and field questions real time, okay?
Okay.
But I've got another one from Anthony, who says, with print and online bundle buys, is it better to offer as an overall package price or break out each individually?
Great question.
Yeah?
Yeah, great question. The reason that I don't break it out individually, I do give a total value. I don't break it out individually because people have a tendency to go a la carte on the sales rep. So typically, and again, every case is unique, but I'll typically say, you know, you're going to pay this, you know, and this, and the total value, I'm sorry, you're going to get this, and this. The total value is, the actual price is, the savings is. Typically, we don't list them out. The flip side is, not all the time, but we have seen many publishers adopt this philosophy. If you're not a print advertiser, you're not on our website. And that's another way to preserve and help not cannibalize. Even if it's a quarter page, if you're not running, you know, in our publication, you know, you're not online, or make the website really expensive. If you're not a print advertiser, you have to pay double the rate, you know, to be on the website. Encourage people to be involved with your publication because you really want the advertiser to have as many points of exposure to a potential customer, as possible. So I would not break those things out personally.
Okay. And I'm just going to fly through just a couple of quick questions here that rolled in. Jeff said, is your advice to have dedicated web salespeople versus print web salespeople? And Jeff, we've seen both work, but bottom line is they really need to be well trained. Generally, though, if you've got enough volume and velocity that people can just stay on the web, that part's fine, but that's more select. Most publications, we wrap it right under the print and the website, and it's just done, you know, from that perspective. And, Ryan, I can hear you saying yes.
More success. I've seen more success with the integrated buy. Now, you will, if you're a publication that deals a lot with agencies, then you will want to have two separate teams because the print agency and the interactive agency are two completely separate animals. They bill separately, et cetera.
Mm-hmm. Yep, perfect. Another couple of laser ones here. Mike, you say, can legacy teams actually sell internet effectively? 100%. But it is a new skill set. It cannot, just because you've sold media or print or publications or billboards or whatever it is, you still need the skill set to sell electronically. That's an absolute, and it's quite frankly the reason why Ryan and our team is so good at it, because we do this all day long. Another piece
And show them other success stories. I mean, you need to show them with other publications how it's worked. You know, don't just talk theoretically. Say, look, we've seen these five publications. They're making it work.
Yep,
you know,
absolutely.
Show them success.
Here's another one from Yvette. How do we train our print salespeople to sell online? Yvette, well, we've learned about training rather than coaching. Training is a one-time, you know, and companies will say, why don't you come in and do a one-day program? We're like, no, we'd rather not do an eight-hour brain dump. We'd rather do 8 one-hour calls over 8 weeks. That's far more effective. That the coaching component means that we transfer the knowledge. Training means that we sort of dump it and disappear. That's not the approach. You have to do it incrementally. Let the team go out and work on it for a week and then come back. What did you bump into? What did you learn? Where were the wins? Where were the challenges? And then we continue the learning from there very incrementally. So that's really key, Yvette. Let's see. Tom, you asked about value-added programs and rate cards. Yes, there's a lot of work. We've done entire calls about rate cards, but there is work about how you bundle in print plus newsletter plus web and make it all sing, as you heard Ryan talking about, not to break that off. Ed asked a question about clients are asking for a 67% discount off the rate card. Ed, them be big percentages. Ed, you have to use and sell from media comparisons and media summaries. Otherwise, you're not selling and presenting with value, and you're going to constantly be in a discounting perspective. And one last question. Bonnie, who says, since our revenue in our print version is still reducing, should we concentrate on sales online and eventually go completely online? Bonnie, we don't want to give you a categorical yes or no on that, but there are reasons why you want to lean either more towards print or digital. But here's the key piece to know, and then we'll pause and field some real-time questions. The key piece to know is that we really believe in the combination of print plus web and digital. Okay? We really, really believe in that. Okay? So let's take a breath. Man, there was a lot to cover. Ryan, thank you so much for all the prep. And I know we're going to open up the lines here in just a minute and take a breath and work with the group a little bit. But, of course, I want to say thank you, Jed, for your wonderful partnership, your wonderful friendship, all the work we've done over all the years. It's really been fantastic. But thank you to you and your team for making these calls come together, inviting your clients and prospective clients. And, of course, we're on our side inviting all of and many of our clients attend these along the way. So how about some closing words for the group, and then we'll actually talk about how to open up the call here, okay?
No, great. I mean, I you know, again, thank you. Thank you, Ernest, for doing this, and Ryan, good job. I certainly learned a lot, and I suspect a lot of people on the call did as well. So, and thanks to all of you who attended.
Absolutely, and thank you, Jed, for the wonderful services you provide with MediaBids. For those of you that are on this call, please take a moment to take a look at their site, engage with their team, learn more about what they're doing. They're doing a fantastic job for our clients and with our clients and for the publication industry in general. This is also Ernest and Ryan with Power Hour. If we can help you along the way with your web training or web strategies, you can hear our passion and expertise. And Ryan, thank you so much for showcasing all that you bring and really presenting it in a way that's very educational and very informative for the group. We really appreciate that. Okay?
My pleasure.
All right, very good. Let me just go ahead and pause our call, and then we're going to talk about how to open it up for informal questions for the next maybe 5 or 10 or as much as 15 minutes. But how long we hang out is entirely up to you, so be thinking about the questions that you want to ask us. So give me just one moment.